This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. Your grain futures on the Chicago Board of Trade were mixed on Monday. Corn for September finished a penny and three quarters lower to 340 and three quarters. December corn finished a penny and a quarter cent lower to 354 and a quarter. March corn finished a penny and a half lower to 367 and a quarter. Soybeans remained steady. September was at 845. November steady at 857 and three quarters. January steady at 872. Chicago wheat for September gained 14 and a quarter to 474 and a half. December wheat gained 10 and three quarters to 474 and a half. And March wheat for next year gained 8.5 to 479. Soybean meal for September gained $1.30 to $2.88.50. October bean meal gained $1.10 to $2.90.40. December bean meal gained $1 to $2.94. Finally, soybean oil for September lost 22 cents to $28.26. October bean oil lost 20 cents to $28.26. December bean oil lost 20 cents as well to $28.45. So to recap your closing grain futures from Monday, corn was down 1 to 2, soybeans remained steady, wheat was 8.5 to 14 and a quarter cents higher, bean meal gained $1 to $1.30, soybean oil lost 20 to 22 cents. Now this time we'll move on and take you to the Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Monday's Cash Grain Report.
This is Monday's reported grain price and trends prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois country grain prices are lower on Monday afternoon without a trade deal with China and a favorable weather forecast. Trade is looking forward to Thursday's USDA crop report. In northern West Illinois country, grain deals quoted shell corn bids 1 to 2 cents lower at 308 to 350. Soybean bids were down 2 to 4 cents at 779 to 805. In central Illinois country, grain deals quoted shell corn bids down 2 cents at 329 to 354. Soybean bids were mostly steady to a penny lower at 794 to 838. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were steady to 2 cents lower at 298 to 369. Soybean bids were steady to down 4 at 781 to 818. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were steady at 815 to 853. Basis is unchanged at 4300 at 5 under the November. High pro soybean meal on a truck basis offered at 276.40 to 293.40 a ton. Up $1.10 a ton, with basis steady at 1,400 to 3 over the October. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids were a penny lower at 354 to 371, with basis unchanged at option to 17 over the December. Illinois River barge loading elevators quoted to producer corn bids mixed at 326 to 354, with basis mixed at 2,800 to option in December. Soybeans ended mixed at 804 to 817. Well, basis mixed at 54 under to 41 under the November. Cash wheat prices were up 11 cents at 435 to 445. Well, basis steady at 40 under to 30 under the December. East St. Louis barge flowing twice placed their producer corn bids 2 to 3 cents lower at 342 to 343. Their soybean prices were mostly a penny lower at 818 to 825. Soft wheat closed up 11 cents at 477 to 485. And Milo ended the day mostly 2 cents lower at 333 to 334. Contract bids producers for October and November delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 309 to 345, soybeans at 782 to 818. And in the central part of the state, corn for October and November delivery at 325 to 354, soybeans at 789 to 839. In the southern part of the state, corn for October and November delivery at $3 to 364, soybeans at 781 to 830, and June, July wheat at 455 to 479. That concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Monday's livestock futures finished lower across the board, starting in live cattle for October that lost 67 cents to 94.20. December live cattle lost 57 cents to 99.17. February live cattle lost 32 to 106.07. Feeder cattle for September lost 52 cents to 132.82. October feeders were down $1.07 to 129.82. November feeders were down $1.57 to 128.80. Finally, lean hogs for October were down 90 cents to 62.60. December lean hogs were down 252 to 59.95. February lean hogs were down 257 to 68.27. Now to recap your livestock futures from Monday. Live cattle were down 32 to 67 cents. Feeders were down 52 to $1.57. Lean hogs were down 90 cents to $2.57. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Department of Agriculture in Springfield for your cash livestock report for Monday.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Monday afternoon's livestock report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass traded $1.42 lower in a range of $46 to $51.50, with a weighted average carcass price of $50.69. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sow prices were weak, with light to moderate demand for heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows weighing under 400 pounds traded at $19 to $23, 4 to 5 weight at $21 to $25, 5 to 6 weight at $23 to $27, over 600 pounds at $25 to $29. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, prices for barrows and gilts at the country buying points were 1 to 2 cents lower, with light to moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from $29 to $36. Receipts for Illinois barrows and gilts have totaled $36,730. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was established with 325 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was $71.91, which was $1.42 lower. From the National Boxed Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading lower. Choice carcasses were $226.95, which was 36 cents lower. Select carcasses at $201.92, which was 2 cents lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 115,000 compared to 3,000 for last week and 119,000 for 1 year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 485,000 compared to 2,000 last week and 458,000 1 year ago. That concludes our livestock report. This is Katie Lemonager with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show on this Tuesday morning. It's coming up on 617, radar showing no precipitation in the mid-Illinois listening area. This check of radar weather brought to you by the M&M Service Company.
Applying the right products to the right place is essential to each crop acre. That's why growers turn to M&M Service Company for custom application. Their applicators stay focused on what's ahead by applying accurate inputs at just the right time in the crop life cycle. M&M's custom applicators maximize each acre and ensure your fields are ready for what's next. This fall, look to M&M Service Company for all your farming application needs. M&M Service Company, bringing you what's next.
Today, partly cloudy skies, a slight chance of showers, high temperatures in the low 90s. With south winds at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers, lows in the low 70s. Tomorrow, Wednesday, sunny skies, highs in the low 90s. And for Thursday through Saturday, partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers Thursday night, lows in the upper 50s, highs in the upper 80s. Right now at the Weather Center, 72 degrees under partly cloudy skies. This check of radar weather brought to you by the M&M Service Company. Part two of the Morning Ag Show is next.
Farming. It's genetics. It's what you are, who you are, what you're made of. It's agronomy. Local knowledge of your land and having the tools to put the right product in the right place. It's built on service, with trust, grit, and determination. Because what it takes to make the best product is a lot like what it takes to make a farmer. Golden Harvest. Rooted in genetics, agronomy, and service. Talk to your local Golden Harvest Seed Advisor or visit goldenharvestseeds.com.
Part two of the Morning Ag Show brought to you this morning by Seavers Equipment of Hamel, Hillsboro, Greenfield, Carlinville, Auburn, and Jerseyville. By the Litchfield National Bank. And by the CHS Service Center. Farmer owned with global connections. And once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy. And in national ag news for a Tuesday, Congress is back in session and facing a crowded legislative agenda with little time to get it done, including the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. Spending, gun control, prescription drugs, and trade bills all dominate the fall legislative agenda, with the House in for just 13 legislative days this month, before another two-week recess. But probably none is more important for farmers than ratifying the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, worth some $2 billion in new export sales. Mexico has ratified it, Canada says it will, and U.S. House Democrats have slow-walked the 10-month-old deal, arguing for tougher labor and environmental provisions. At the American Farm Bureau Federation, trade advisor Dave Salmonson says most of the action on the USMCA is behind the scenes.
Well, on USMCA, we hear is the both sides, and of course at the staff level, as they have been all through August, are talking and working on the four negotiating areas.
But is a breakthrough in sight?
No, nothing that we hear yet.
Republicans and the administration are trying to convince Speaker Nancy Pelosi that ratifying the USMCA is a political win for Democrats, not just for the president. National Pork Producers Council Chief David Herring says it's a huge win for his industry amid the damage from Chinese tariffs.
China is the largest producer, consumer, importer, and importer of pork in the world, but at a 62% tariff rate, U.S. pork producers are losing $8 per animal or $1 billion on an annualized basis. We seek an end to the trade dispute with China. Additionally, pork producers are eager to see ratification of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement.
The USMCA preserves 0% pork tariffs in North America, with nearly 40% of all U.S. pork exports going to Mexico and Canada. And its backers argue passing it would also strengthen the U.S. negotiating hand with China. And moving on into the latest news from China, planned trade talks next month between China and the United States has agriculture and the U.S. economy optimistic that the talks will make progress. Politico reports that in the talks last week, China offered to purchase more U.S. ag products ahead of the planned negotiations for October. Phone conversations are expected to increase in volume between the two sides over the next few weeks. China will travel to Washington in early October to meet face-to-face, a rescheduling of talks planned for early September. The planned meetings this month lost traction after an escalation of tariffs between the U.S. and China in August. During phone conversations last week, Chinese officials confirmed that the two sides agreed that they should work together and take practical actions to create a favorable condition for consultations. Meanwhile, farm groups are urging Congress and the administration to finalize the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, as lawmakers have returned from a six-week recess. Finally, President Trump is expected to sign a trade agreement with Japan this month, another welcome trade development for agriculture. In other national news, the Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service is compiling fall reports with surveys underway. Michael Clemens has the report.
Farmers and ranchers are encouraged to complete their surveys. Responses to these surveys provide a foundation for crop yield estimates, production practices, and helps set accurate loan rates, disaster payments, and crop insurance price elections. Dan Carestis, USDA NAS Statistics Division Director, says several surveys are underway.
Coming this fall, we're starting off with an September agricultural survey. We'll be going out to farmers and asking them acreage yield and production on their small grains, and we'll be publishing that on September the 30th. And at the same time we're doing that survey, we'll also be asking them about their grain stocks, and grain stocks will be published on the 30th as well. Moving on from there, during the first 2 weeks of September, we're also contacting hog producers across the U.S. and asking them about how much inventory they have on their farm as far as hogs, breeding information, pig crop, and we'll publish that information on September the 27th.
USDA is also conducting the Agricultural Resource Management Survey and County Agricultural Production Surveys.
Our Agricultural Resource Management Survey collects information on chem use for barley, cotton, sorghum, and wheat this year, and also collects information on production practices. That survey actually won't be published till later in May of 2020. And then during the fall, as every year, we work on our county agricultural production surveys. We start off at this time of the year collecting information on barley, wheat, and oats down to the county level, and that gets published in December. And then following up in October, we collect information on row crops, corn, soybeans, cotton, collecting basically the same information, how much is planted, harvested, and yield, and publishing that in 2020.
Carestis says it's important for farmers to respond to the surveys.
This is the one chance for the farmer to really tell us about himself, tell us what's going on out there. It allows NAS to measure what's going on in the industry, and the information that comes from these surveys is used in many different ways. It allows farmers to make good decisions how they should market their information, and at the same time, it allows other people like lawmakers, bankers, analysts to make decisions using the same information that everyone else is using to make decisions that impact producers.
Questionnaires are mailed to many farmers, but surveys can also be completed online.
USDA goes through a process. Typically, we mail out the questionnaires to the producer. We follow up by telephone. Sometimes we follow up with personal enumeration. But there's one thing that we do with all of our surveys now is we make them available online. And that's probably the easiest place for the producer to fill out the questionnaire and get it back to us. In the future, we'd like to have more and more use of online response as we can get.
He says it's important to know that USDA NAS surveys are different than those done by the Farm Service Agency or private organizations.
Most of our surveys are voluntary, but the key thing is that we're selecting a unbiased sample. It's scientific in the way that it's done. The results from our survey, they're unbiased. And it's not connected to any type of payment or reimbursement or anything like that. We're just out there to collect the information and make sure that we get the best information out for the producer to use.
You can find the release schedule of reports online at nas.usda.gov. Following the crop production report release on September 12th, USDA NAS will host a live Twitter chat beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Follow USDA_NAS on Twitter to participate. Michael Clements reporting.
Moving along now this morning into local news. The St. Louis District Dairy Council is reaching out to discuss the childhood obesity epidemic. Since September is National Childhood Obesity Awareness Month. Here with us for this interview today is Jill Williams, registered dietitian with the St. Louis District Dairy Council.
So, how prevalent is childhood obesity? We hear about it a lot, but really sometimes it's not really put into scope. So how prevalent is it today?
Well, about, you know, 1 out of 5 kids is obese. So ages, 2 to 19 is what we're talking about. So, it is, quite prevalent really in younger kids. That translates to about almost 14 million children and adolescents that are obese. And then, it gets higher as they get older. So obesity prevalence when they're younger is about maybe like 14% of 2 to 5-year-olds. When they get older, up to 12 to 19 years old, about 20% of kids are obese, which makes sense because obviously, you gain more weight kind of as you get older. But, a lot of those kids, 2 to 5 years old, when you think about that, are already overweight or obese. That's kind of a scary thing because it's like those behaviors, keep continuing on into adolescence and then even into adulthood. So, there's a lot of ways that we can support kids, but there's not necessarily a simple solution to childhood obesity.
So why is this an issue? Of course, you don't really want anybody to be obese and overweight because this creates a bunch of health problems, but for children, why is it really an issue?
Right. And, even kids do get a higher risk of having other health conditions like asthma, sleep apnea. They could have bone and joint problems. They can develop type 2 diabetes even as children. When they are obese, they can get high cholesterol, high blood pressure. And, these are a lot of diseases that people didn't really get until they were older, years ago. Like people would get type 2 diabetes or, high blood pressure and things like that once they got into maybe their 40s or 50s. So it's kind of, a scary thing when you see young children getting these diseases because, you know, you know that those behavior or those, you know, things are going to continue into adulthood. You know, and also kids with obesity, they could be bullied or teased. They're more likely to suffer from depression and lower self-esteem. And, you know, you just don't want them to have those lifelong, you know, physical and mental health problems.
So once a kid could get into obesity, what are the main causes of it? Of course, we think, you know, too much eating, overeating, but sometimes there could be some other factors as well.
That's right. Yeah, eating habits are a big one. I mean, that's probably number one, certainly. But also it could be physical activity behaviors, you know, just with so much electronics now, it just seems like kids are sitting so much more, not necessarily playing outside. Genetics plays a part, certainly. Their metabolism, their family, their home environment, other community and social factors. And, you know, obesity can be influenced by stress, by lack of sleep. There might be lack of places to go in the community to get physical activity. They might have just really easy access to high-calorie foods and sugary beverages and a lack of access to affordable and healthy foods.
So, and of course, all of our conversations revolve around dairy. So how can dairy be involved in this conversation?
So it is, you know, and I always say, like, you don't necessarily want to put kids on a diet, you know, I mean, unless, you know, if it's a very extreme case, you really want to work with a health professional. But, you know, for kids especially, you just want to teach healthy eating habits. So you want to make sure that they're eating from all the food groups. And, you know, dairy is an important group to include. So, you know, getting those servings of milk and cheese and yogurt. They have all those essential nutrients to keep us healthy, to keep kids' bones healthy. They're one of the main sources of calcium in the diet. So it is really important to get those dairy products in. And research actually shows that kids who drink milk are more likely to have a lower body mass than kids that don't. And it's thought that calcium and dairy products can help us lose weight by helping to break down fat. So, you know, other ingredients in dairy products, such as whey proteins, might be playing a role in this. But it is important, you know, just to get a variety of foods and, you know, to try and get those fruits and vegetables, to try and get your dairy products in. You know, and then if you're filling up on healthy foods, you're not going to be as hungry for all those other, you know, sugary or, you know, foods that don't really necessarily have any, they just have a lot of empty calories.
And that more wholesome food is a lot more filling, as you said.
That's right. So, exactly.
You could eat less wholesome food instead of more just, like you said, unfulfilling type foods.
Yes.
So how can we prevent, which, of course, unfortunately, we really can't prevent everything, mm-hmm. but more, how could we improve those rates, maybe, of childhood obesity?
Well, parents need to educate themselves on what a healthy diet looks like, including all the food groups like fruits, vegetables, whole grain, protein, especially dairy. You know, parents really need to be a role model for their kids. So if you don't ever cook vegetables at home, then you can't really expect your kid to eat vegetables, right? If you don't eat vegetables, then your kid's probably not going to eat them either if you're never making them or whatever. So, you know, you do need to be a good role model for your kids. The community, as far as like community groups, we can try and ensure that neighborhoods have low-cost physical activity opportunities like parks and trails and community centers. I know, you know, I live in Springfield, but I just signed my daughter up, and she's only three, but they have this healthy kids running series or something. So I just signed her up for that. So, you know, just try and find ways to get kids active, and even if it's, you know, even if it's something free, you know, just get them outside, take them to a park, let them run around. Healthcare providers are important in this as well. So if you are, if you're a parent and you're concerned about your kid's weight, you know, talk to their doctor about it, talk to a dietitian about it. or a doctor might talk to you about it. And you might not be aware until you go to their appointment and they tell you, you know, their height and their weight and their body mass index. And they might, you know, refer you to some other programs that you might need. Also, early childcare education centers and schools should just adopt policies and practices that support healthy eating by promoting all the food groups, including dairy. So.
And, of course, dairy can be used as a substitute in cooking compared to some unhealthy alternatives.
That's true. And, you know, there's a lot of ways you can substitute higher-fat foods for lower-fat foods with dairy. So, for example, if your recipe calls for a cup of sour cream, you could use a cup of plain non-fat yogurt. You can save tons of calories and fat. So if you're, like, making a dip or something like that, you can just take a cup of plain yogurt and add your ranch powder or add, you know, taco seasoning or something like that and make a little dip for vegetables. And it's much healthier than using sour cream. Sour cream, of course, is also dairy. And, you know, it's okay to eat in moderation. But, you know, if you're someone that really loves dip, I know my husband, like, can eat, like, a whole container of dip in one sitting. So he can turn something healthy into, like, you know, eating vegetables and dip into something unhealthy because he ate so much dip. So, you know, if we make a dip with yogurt or something like that, then it's like, okay, well, this was, you know, pretty healthy instead of eating all that sour cream. You can also use it to substitute for vegetable oil. So like a cup of vegetable oil equals a cup of plain yogurt. So if you are baking something, like baking some muffins or a cake or something like that that calls for vegetable oil, you can use yogurt instead. It will kind of change the texture, make it a little bit more dense. But I've made blueberry muffins with it before, and they were really good. And again, it saves on, you know, tons of calories and fat. You know, you can also substitute like heavy cream with plain yogurt, things like that. So there's lots of different ways that you can do those substitutions, especially with yogurt, and make it a lot healthier.
And I'm sure the quality of it and maybe even the taste might improve as well.
Yeah.
Making these alternative changes.
Exactly. And you're lowering the calories, you're lowering the fat, and you're increasing the protein so much as well. So you're really getting a lot more nutrients in there. And, you know, just try some easy substitutions and see if those work for you. And, you know, not just with dairy. There's lots of easy things you can do in your diet, you know, to make some simple changes that are really going to make a big impact. And, you know, you just have to start slow.
And there's always a great wealth of knowledge. You could just Google it now.
And
just,
that's right.
There it is. So other ways to find out good information online as well. Where could the listeners go when it comes to the Dairy Council?
Well, we have a website. It's www.stldairycouncil.org, and on our website we have all kinds of recipes. We have several new recipes each month. We also have lots of different resources for the public. We have resources for teachers and all kinds of information like that. We have a Facebook and an Instagram page. If you can look us up at STL Dairy Council, and that's where we post lots of pictures of what we're doing out in the community and at schools and things like that. And if you have specific questions, you can email us at info@stldairycouncil.org.
And again, that was Jill Williams, registered dietitian with the St. Louis District Dairy Council. And finally, on this Tuesday morning, we have the latest crop progress and condition report for the state of Illinois for you that was released for the state yesterday. For that, we join state statistician Mark Sloysener with the National Ag Statistics Service in Springfield.
Cool weather continued across the prairie state last week, and rainfall was below normal as well. Temperatures ranged from slightly above normal to 3 degrees below normal, and the average around the state was 68.8 degrees, and that is 1.8 degrees below normal for this time of year. Rainfall averaged nearly 1/2 inch, which is slightly below normal. There was an average of 5.6 days suitable for field work last week, and topsoil moisture levels were reported as 10% very short, 22 short, 65 adequate, and 3% surplus, which is a little drier than 1 week ago. Growing degree days accumulated since May 1 are above average in southern parts of Illinois, but below normal in central and northern areas. Corn has reached the dough stage on 88% of acres. That compares to 100% 1 year ago and 99% for the 5 year average. Corn in the dense stage reached 53% compared to the 5 year average of 87. 8% of corn acres are now mature compared to 35 normally. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was rated as 21% very poor to poor, 41% fair, and 38% good to excellent, which is a little worse than 1 week ago. The Illinois soybean crop is now setting pods on 90% of acres compared to 100 last year and 99 normally. 3% of soybean acres are turning color compared to 46% normally. The condition of the Illinois soybean crop was reported as 19% very poor to poor, 40 fair, and 41% good to excellent, a little worse than 1 week ago. The third cutting of alfalfa hay is 82% finished compared to 91% normally. Pasture conditions were rated 21% very poor to poor, 42% fair, and 37% good to excellent, and that is also a little worse than 1 week ago. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
And that just about wraps it up for this Tuesday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have any ag news for us, you can email that to us at wsmi@wsmiradio.com. So for this Tuesday morning, September 10th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting for WSMI Ag News.